Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. This is the 100th episode of the Clubhouse podcast. And 100 of them. Kind of crazy, actually. If you think back, I had my dad on the first episode. I had Wesley Bryan and his brother early on, before he obviously became a PGA Tour star and won on the PGA Tour, and now has sponsorships and gets to be in commercials and all that stuff. And throughout the run, we've had Rory McIlroy and Gary Player and Ricky Fowler and Brooks Koepka, and the list goes on. And, you know, some of my favorite Clubhouse podcasts have been with the people that maybe you don't look at as popular guests. But this one was one of my favorites, the 100th episode. Chris Nashawaty, I wanted to make sure I got that right, the author of Caddyshack, The Making of a Hollywood Cinderella Story, jumped on with me for half an hour, and we just chatted about the book and Caddyshack and, you know, where the idea came from and all that went on in the set back in 1980 as this movie came out, which is, you know, I mean, if you're a golf fan, you've probably watched Caddyshack a couple dozen times, and, you know, maybe it's not the best representation of golf, but it is definitely the best representation of kind of the stereotypes that follow golf along, and that is one of my favorite parts about the book. So I hope you guys enjoy the chat with Chris, and I wanted to remind you before we get to the interview, I had summer is basically here, and that means one thing. Well, it means a lot of things: the sun, the beach, summer camp, refreshing cold drinks, and of course, it means vacation. Vacation means travel, and nothing is worse than heading out on a trip and realizing you forgot something important. So what do? You switch to an Ogio bag. All Ogio travel bags come with their signature thoughtful organization, so you'll have a place to put all your most important things. Add in smart features like separate pockets for dirty clothes, a dedicated place for your shoes. Now your life is so much easier when you come home, so make sure you check out Ogio travel bags, and special for listeners of the Clubhouse to celebrate back to summer, you can save 25% on all travel bags at Ogio.com with the promo code Clubhouse. Ogio, the world's best bags. I will be on the road basically the next 5 weeks. So if the audio is a little bit different in the coming Clubhouse episodes, don't yell at me. That's just a hotel, and that's what happens. But I will get to the interview here with Chris, again, the author of Caddyshack, The Making of a Hollywood Cinderella Story. If you haven't checked out the book or you haven't read it yet, I urge you to do so. It was a fascinating read, and if you're a fan of golf at all, trust me, you'll be a fan of this. And we welcome into the Clubhouse Chris Nashawaty. I feel like I nailed that. Author of Caddyshack, The Making of a Hollywood Cinderella Story. And Chris, I've listened to a couple of the interviews you've done thus far, and I have to ask, I haven't heard this yet, so I wanted to ask, how many times have you watched Caddyshack now? Is it in the hundreds?
Oh, God. It's probably around 100, give or take five in either direction. But yeah, I've certainly seen it more than anyone should.
So you were doing some research. I was listening to a couple of interviews you did, and you were doing some research on this for a story back in 2010. And of course, now that's kind of how the book came about. You know, were you a fan of the movie? Are you a golf fan? I mean, was this simply put? I mean, you do a lot of movie, you know, reviews, and you're a movie critic. Did this just kind of materialize from that, or were you a fan of this type of movie in the game of golf before?
Well, you know, I think, you know, first off, like, my day job is as a movie critic at Entertainment Weekly. And when people hear that you're a movie critic, they sort of expect you to, your favorite movie to be some highbrow art film, and, you know, like Citizen Kane or something, which is great. But the fact is, I grew up in the 80s, and so the movies that are, like, dearest to me are movies like Animal House and Stripes and Caddyshack and Vacation and things like that. So, you know, I was always in love with this movie. I saw it at a very young age, like an inappropriately young age, and I've just always had a soft spot for it. And so when Sports Illustrated in 2010 asked me to write a making of Caddyshack story, I started doing all of the interviews with Bill Murray and Chevy Chase and Harold Ramis, the director. And I just, the more and more I spoke to people, the more I realized that, you know, there were so many great stories, and it was such an example of how not to make a movie, and yet somehow this great movie that we're still quoting nearly 40 years later came out of it. You know, it just sort of, I felt like it was, there was a bigger story to tell, a book. You know, I am a golf fan. I love the game. I play it in a sort of sad way, not as badly as Rodney Dangerfield, but but you know, I love sports and movies, and so this is the perfect sort of intersection point.
And you I was going to get to this later, but you mentioned Bill Murray, and Bill Murray, not an easy guy to get a hold of. He has like a 1-800 number that you have to call, and this isn't just for you and for interviews. I mean, this is for everybody.
Yeah, Bill Murray is a strange cat. You know, he is not the typical Hollywood movie star who has this whole, you know, machine around him with publicists and managers and agents. He just sort of operates off the grid on his own. And, you know, he has this 1-800 number, and I managed to get that number through sort of a mutual friend of his and mine. And I called the number, and it's weird. There's no like outgoing message like, hey, this is Bill Murray, leave a message. It's just a beep. And suddenly you find yourself on the spot. Like, how do I even approach asking this guy for an interview? And so I called that number every day for pretty close to a month. With a variety of different approaches, you know what I mean? Talking about different movies of his and all these, you know, shameless sort of ways to get his attention. And finally, he called me back, you know, at 9:30 at night. I just happened to still be in the office, and I saw a South Carolina number pop up, and I was like, oh, my God, could it be? And I picked up the phone, and as soon as you hear the voice, you know, from a lifetime of watching movies, you know exactly who it is. And but you don't know who you're going to get. You know, I mean, he's notoriously a pretty moody guy. And I just happened to catch him on a really good night. You know, he just wanted to talk about the movie. And I think the movie is very sentimental to him because it's, you know, he loves golf and it was very important to the early part of his career. And his older brother was one of the writers on it. And there's a lot of Murray anecdotes in there that most people don't, you know that's where they came from. So yeah, he was great, but boy, yeah, it was a real, real odyssey to get him.
And I'm interested with Bill. I mean, obviously everybody is interested with Bill Murray when it comes to Caddyshack, but you know, this is a guy that you mentioned it. I mean, he's a guy that has really kind of, carved his life through golf. I mean, you know, you think about the Caddyshack bars and, you know, he's always a staple at Pebble Beach at the AT&T for better or worse at this point. And you mentioned, I mean, he did seem to like talking about it, which is very interesting. I mean, there are people, there are musicians that hate playing their, you know, their greatest hit
the
at
hit.
Times.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And this is a guy that seemed to enjoy talking about Caddyshack. I feel like he almost seems like a guy that maybe wouldn't love talking about it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. First of all, he doesn't do a ton of interviews, so I don't think he probably talks about Caddyshack as much as you think. I really think that, you know, most people don't know that the Michael O'Keefe, Danny Noonan character in the movie, you know, the main young caddy in the film, that's very much based on the Murray boys. You know, they are, the Murrays are an Irish Catholic family with 9 kids. They grew up in a pretty ritzy town just north of Chicago, but they were very working class. And so in order to make money for Jesuit school, all the boys caddied and worked as shag boys in the summer to, you know, to earn tuition. And I think that, you know, that to him is a very special time in his life. He talked about all the values he learned being a caddy, you know, speak when spoken to, you know, carrying a heavy load in the rain. You know what I mean? Just like these great life lessons he learned at a young age, caddying and being on the golf course. And also he had a lot of experience with really crazy, colorful country club members who, you know, found their way into the movie, or like wacky fellow caddies that made their way into the movie. So I do think that Caddyshack, once you get him going and get him in the nostalgic sort of framework, he's very eager to talk about it.
And he wasn't really, I mean, he wasn't a main figure initially when they looked at the landscape of this movie, right? I mean, he wasn't really going to be, you know, this, you know, quotable guy some, you know, 40 years later. And he almost kind of carved his way into it. And also, he was kind of flaky. He wasn't really there when they wanted him to be. He kind of showed up on a whim, and I think it was a VW Bug, you know,
yeah,
RV or van or something.
What happened was, you know, Bill Murray works on Bill Murray time. So, you know, when he shows up, he shows up. And they knew that, you know, going into it. They all knew Bill Murray. Harold Ramis had worked with him at Second City. And, you know, they knew what they were getting into. You know, Bill Murray's character, Carl, the sort of demented greenskeeper or assistant greenskeeper, he wasn't in the original draft of the script, or the second or the third draft of the script, for that matter. He was very much a late addition and only a very small part. And they only had Bill Murray for a week on set, you know, when he did finally show up, because he had to go back to New York to shoot the next season of Saturday Night Live. So, you know, the scenes that he has in the movie, they didn't really exist in the script. They knew that Bill was such a great improviser that they just left blank white space in the script and just said, Bill riffs here. And they gave him sort of a premise. Like for for this great Cinderella story scene, you know, they told Bill, like, all right, this is basically what we want you to do. What you say is sort of up to you, you know. And the director, Harold Ramis, said to him, like, look, when you're golfing, do you ever do, like, commentator narration in your head? And he said, stop, say no more, I got it, roll the camera, let's do this. And in one take, you know, 90 seconds of pure comedy genius gold, he does Cinderella's story, which is sort of remarkable, you know. It's sort of amazing. And since he was so good, they kept finding new scenes for him to do. So this very small part became a much bigger part by the time he was done with it.
It seems like Caddyshack was basically the start of this this SNL movie push. I mean, you've said Second City already, and it was something I was going to bring up. I mean, if people don't know what Second City is, basically it was SNL live in Chicago. You know, it seems like that Caddyshack was the start of what we've seen basically become, you know, SNL characters made as movie figures. And that is a little bit of what we're seeing here. I mean, these were people that were at Saturday Night Live, and they became stars because of, you know, this movie, which wasn't well received early. I mean, it wasn't a hit to start. And now, of course, you know, everybody that listens to this podcast has probably seen it 50 times. But, you know, this seems to be the groundwork of what we've seen, you know, not at the Roxbury and types of movies like that.
Yeah, Wayne's World. I mean, the list goes on. You know, yes, this wasn't the very first. It was one of the first. I mean, the one right before it, the first one you could really argue was Animal House, which came out 2 years before this. And Animal House was the biggest. It became the biggest movie comedy of all time. It was made for $2 million. It made $140 million. Became this runaway success. Turned John Belushi into this huge megastar. And so the guys who wrote Animal House, Doug Kenny and Harold Ramis, you know, they didn't know what they were going to do next, but everyone wanted to be in business with them because of Animal House. So they went in and they pitched Brian Doyle Murray's idea of Caddyshack. And so the studio was like, yeah, let's do it, hoping that they'd get another Animal House out of it. Like you said, the movie was not well received. It did okay at the box office. You know, it wasn't a big disappointment, but it certainly wasn't another Animal House, and the critics just dogpiled on it. They hated it. The reviews, if you go back and read them today, are like the most savage takedowns that you know, would ever read about a movie. But it was really over time, you know, with VHS and re-airings on cable, that people just watched and rewatched the movie and memorized the lines, and it really had this sort of cult snowball effect. You know, and we're at the point now where if you're at a golf event, someone's going to say Noonan, you know what I mean, right, when someone's trying to putt or whatever. It's just become part of the sports vocabulary in our country.
In golf is, I mean, you know, you think of Caddyshack, and I would say golf is the first word that comes to mind, but it's not really a golf movie, you know. It is around golf, but it's a movie that I feel like is extremely character based, and it had, you know, the lineup. If you go to IMDb, this movie, I mean, the lineup of characters within Caddyshack is a list of, you know, kind of the heavy hitters in comedy back in that era, and there's some golf elements to it, but I don't really feel like golf is the kind of the main catalyst of this movie. Yet, you know, it's kind of the thing we think about.
Yeah, I mean, Caddyshack is a golf movie in the same way that, like, maybe Jaws is a movie about, you know, going to the beach or, you know, sunbathing. It's really not. That's not what it is. I mean, there is golf in it, and there's some really terrible golf in it.
Right.
You know, you take one look at it. Go just for just a laugh. Go watch Rodney Dangerfield take a swing. It is. it's not even golf what he's doing. It's like some other, you know, weird alien sport. He's just in such bad shape. They did bring a golf pro down to the set, John Cusano, about 2 weeks before they started shooting to make all the actors look like they knew what they were doing. And, you know, Chevy has an arguably, you know, decent swing. Bill Murray, of course, can golf. Michael O'Keefe, you know, he lied and said that he was a scratch golfer to get the part because it was between him and Mickey Rourke. But that got him the part. But he could play, but not that well. So his dad knew the pro at Wingfoot. And he played every day for 2 months before the movie started and got pretty good. So, yeah, it's a golf movie, I guess, but not one like Tin Cup or something like that that really gets into the psychology of the sport.
Wanted to take a quick break to tell you that this time of year brings us two things, graduation and Father's Day, and the gifts that go along with them. Before you buy Dad another tie or that grad a balloon that will probably float away, ask yourself this. Does my dad or grad like wings or sports? Or better yet, do they like both? If the answer is yes, then get them a Buffalo Wild Wings gift card right now. If you purchase $30 worth or more in-store or online, they'll give you $5 bonus to keep for yourself. That's a gift that gives back. How generous of you. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports, terms and conditions apply, of course. Again, get somebody a gift card where they can go have a beer and have some wings and have some blue cheese. Go blue cheese. Don't go ranch. Let's be adults. Back to the interview. It's interesting when you think about kind of the golf movies, and I'm sure you did plenty of research on other, you know, golf movies and comedies that are around the sport, but I mean, you said it, you know, these people don't really play. I mean, if you think about Matt Damon in Bagger Vance, I mean, that was a golf swing that I don't think anybody was going to be convinced was a swing that could compete with a Ben Hogan or somebody like that. And right. You're seeing guys out there that are trying to do it. And I was going to ask you about this and you kind of got into it, but you know, were these, when these actors read about Caddyshack and they read this script, did any of them care about the sport outside of Bill Murray?
Not really. In fact, Chevy Chase was really sort of down on the sport. You know, he sort of thought the sport was a bit of a joke, you know, this sort of Republican joke that, you know, a lot of businessmen did on the weekends to get away from their families. And, you know, he didn't really see the athleticism in it. Bill Murray, of course, is like an evangelist about right. golf. You know, it's really in his marrow of his bones. But, you know, if you look – one of the things that always pulls me out of movies, especially sports movies, is when the actors just – you don't buy them for a second. You know, you mentioned Matt Damon. That's a good example. Pretty much, you know, half the cast of Caddyshack is just lousy at golf. But, you know, it's sort of why I like the movies of Kevin Costner. You know, he's such a natural athlete that you buy him whether he's playing baseball or golf. He looks like – he looks like he belongs there. You know, I think, and Don Johnson and Tin Cup as well. I mean, he looks like he belongs out there. I think both of those guys had like four or five handicaps by the time that they finished shooting. So, you know, there's nothing worse to me than a movie where someone claims to be a pro at something and looks like, you know, they couldn't keep up with, you know, me or anyone in the audience. So Caddyshack doesn't even try really to be a golf movie. It's just like, you know, let's all go with the assumption that no one here knows how to play golf and right. let's overlook that because there's a great duty gag with a Baby Ruth coming up.
You're exactly right. It was, I mean, it actually probably played better, the fact that these people couldn't really golf, because it kind of like bled into the kind of the main theme of this movie was let's look at the golf course. Let's look at all of these types of characters that make up a country club and let's poke fun at every single one of them. And that's what I think it did. I mean, you know, listen, this movie came out in 1980 and it's 2018 and I still see characters. I joined a country club about 5 months ago and I see characters there that I can pull out of Caddyshack. You know, I mean, there's...
Sure, well, I'm sure there's a Judge Smales
of course.
Sort of character at your club. There's a Judge Smales character at every club. You know, I mean, the sort of traditional, you know, uptight guy who just, you know, really sticks to these decades-old rules and the history of the club and all this stuff. And it's really interesting. And I think that's, to me, that's what the great part of the movie is that it's really coming at these archetypes and stereotypes in a satirical way. You know, it's like Animal House, with, you know, the film that preceded it. It's a real snobs versus slobs comedy. You know, you've got these losers who win and these winners who lose. And I think there's something really American about that in comedy. And I think that's why the movie works so well.
In the first cut of Caddyshack was 4.5 hours long, and they needed some sort of a centralized theme to carry this movie and obviously cut it down a little bit. And it became The Gopher. And the song, of course, was written around The Gopher. This was, you know, this is something that has always been a humongous part of Caddyshack, but it wasn't initially was going to be something that was going to carry this movie through. And just tell that story about how The Gopher became, you know, what saved, I guess you could say, saved Caddyshack.
Yeah, you know, the movie was originally supposed to be about, like, this love triangle between Danny Noonan and the young caddy trying to make money for college, and his Irish girlfriend who works at the club, and one of the other caddies. And all of the main characters that we think of, you know, as main characters in the movie, Rodney, Ted Knight, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, were, like, periphery characters that, you know, didn't have a lot to do. But they were so funny that they just sort of decided to peel back on the young caddy love triangle and make that sort of, they followed what was the funniest. And so they beefed up the funny guys and they got rid of this caddy love triangle. And that's great. But the problem with that when you're sort of improvising on the set is that when you get to the editing room, nothing makes any sense whatsoever because you threw the script in the trash. So they had just a bunch of disjointed scenes that were really funny, but nothing connecting them. And so one of the producers, John Peters, sort of just half-jokingly suggested that, well, what if we made The Gopher, who was only in one scene that they had shot, the connective thing? We'll just go back to the studio, we'll get more money, we'll build an animatronic gopher, and we'll shoot more stuff with him, and we'll just pop him in here and there to sort of connect all of these random scenes. So you could argue that The Gopher is the thing that saved the movie, even if, you know, most of the people involved with the movie hated the idea of The Gopher. And Kenny Loggins, when they showed him a rough cut of the movie to sort of come up with ideas for a song, the producer said to him, hey, so the version we're going to show you right now, it's not in there now, but there's going to be a dancing gopher who comes out at the beginning. And he was like, what are you talking about? That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But he, like the rest of us, has come around to sort of accepting The Gopher and embracing it.
Which actors did you enjoy talking to about the movie? Which actors liked talking about Caddyshack? And which actors could you feel didn't love this movie or didn't really feel like they wanted to chat about it?
You know, all of them, I felt, really were eager to talk about it. You know, Chevy Chase and Bill Murray and everyone else. The only one who sort of, you know, I thought Michael O'Keefe was great, you know, who played Danny Noonan. I thought he was a great interview. He gave me a lot of stuff. But he said that, you know, there was a time maybe 10 years ago where he really didn't like talking about the movie. You know, I mean, he sort of felt like he was a serious actor who had wanted his career to have a lot of serious roles in it. And he sort of felt like he had gotten derailed for a while because everyone kept asking him about this goofy comedy. And I think he sort of felt like there was something like it was a blemish on his career in a way. But I think over time he realized that this movie meant so much to so many people that he just decided to embrace it. And, you know, what else can you do? And he was a great interview, too. I found, you know, to a man or a woman, everyone was really eager to talk about Caddyshack. It's been almost four decades, so they really have a sentimental soft spot for it. And plus, you know, talking about all the drugs and stuff that happened on the set of this movie, whatever statute of limitations there was on this stuff has long since passed. So they were free and easy to tell all the anecdotes about the crazy making of this movie.
And we've gone nearly 20 minutes, and I haven't used the word drugs yet. That seems to be...
That's shocking. That's a record, yeah, with this movie.
It seems to be kind of a centralized theme. If you could rename Caddyshack now in 2018, I mean, would that be a part of what you'd rename it?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be like Cocaine Shack or something. I don't know. It's really, you know, they made this movie in Florida in 1979, and that was pretty much the gateway into the country for cocaine. And that wasn't the only drug people were taking on the set. You know, there's a lot of other ones too, but you know, there, it was a very, very wild, decadent sort of set. This sort of thing wouldn't happen today. I mean, the movies have become so expensive. There's so much oversight. But these crazy people were just given a blank check, or not a blank check, but, you know, a pretty decent amount of money to just go off 3,000 miles away from the studio people who were, you know, would look over their shoulder. And they were on their own to just do whatever they wanted. And they had a blast. I mean, you know, they weren't doing drugs while the cameras were rolling, but I can assure you that as soon as they called rap for the day, these people were like headed straight to either the bar or, you know, to do even more extreme things. It was just, it was a crazy, crazy time.
It's interesting because, you know, when I was reading through this, and there's moments where there's literally people walking through asking if somebody basically needed a bump. And I don't want to say I get nostalgic because that would make it seem that I want to do drugs while I work, but it did seem like such an interesting time to, you know, be alive and be in this type of industry. And I wonder, you know, could this movie have been made in 2018, considering how much the randomness was a factor involved around Caddyshack?
Not a chance. Not a chance. And I agree with you. Without, you know, let's be clear to your listeners. Neither of us will advocate the use of drugs in any way. They're bad for you, etc. That said, yeah, I mean, this must have been the most fun place to be for 3 months. You know, they were like, you know, the fox in charge of the hen house. They just, these guys were epic partiers, and you know, there was no one who was older or more experienced or in a position of authority to tell them not to do what they wanted to do. And it really was, they just went insane for 3 months. And when you think about the sort of craziness and the hijinks and the damage they did to this golf course and all of that, it's sort of remarkable that any movie, nevertheless, one that we're talking about so many years after it came out, got made at all. I mean, it's sort of a miracle, because 9 times out of 10, if you make a movie out of these conditions, under these conditions, you get nothing. You get nothing watchable, I promise you.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was basically the first, you know, iteration of a movie based around golf where it showcased this type of sport. And we've seen some great golf movies made. And I was going to ask you, is there a golf movie that you say is your favorite? And I mean, you can obviously say Caddyshack. I mean, I know you've seen it hundreds of times, but is there a golf movie that you've watched and said, you know, this is the best example of what golf is?
You know, I mean, I will say Caddyshack just because I love the movie. I've written a book about it and all of that. But I think you and I maybe agree, you know, to some extent that Caddyshack isn't really a golf movie.
Right.
So if we put that aside, you know, I've mentioned this one already, but I do think Tin Cup is a really profound movie. I find it really moving. I find it has a lot to say about the game, about what it's like to lose your swing, how at the Open anyone can win. I just find the message of that movie and all the little themes in it and all the little extreme sort of eccentric characters like Cheech Marin's character to be just fascinating. So I would say that one. How about you?
I mean, I would probably say Tin Cup as well, even though I think – so I started blogging, which, again, I think blogging is such a weird word. I started blogging back in probably 2006, mm-hmm. And I had my own golf blog, and I wrote a post that I would say it probably got the most traffic on my initial golf blog, where I dove into Tin Cup and all the things that were wrong with golf inside the theme of it. And it almost has kind of ruined the movie for me, because I'll see little things, or, you know, the guy shoots 83, 63, and I'm like, he wouldn't be where he's at score-wise. So there were some parts of it that I didn't love. But I will say this. I did a golf trip down to Tubac, Arizona in early January, where they filmed a lot of Tin Cup. And, you know, it you're literally sitting at certain areas about to hit golf shots, and And it conjures up ideas and thoughts of the movie. And I think the Tin Cup probably carries the most merit inside of golf.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. I mean, Caddyshack is, you know, Caddyshack is the golf movie. You know, I mean, if you're going to watch one golf movie before you die, it's probably Caddyshack. Did you get a chance to watch, you know, I mean, cuts of it that didn't make it, you know, didn't make it in the movie? Did they allow you to do that?
No, well, I mean, there isn't really a cut that exists that didn't make. There are a couple of scenes you can watch, and one of them, in fact, is on YouTube that you can look up. It's sort of a second scene that was shot between Bill Murray and Chevy Chase that didn't make it into the final cut of the movie, and it's easy to see why. It has nothing to do with the movie, although nothing in Caddyshack has anything to do with the movie.
It's all just ridiculousness. That's right.
It's all just shtick, you know, and loosely connected by a gopher, which doesn't make it sound like something you'd want to watch, but it is. Trust me. The thing that I found interesting is that there, I'm sure, at one time existed a lot of scenes that they didn't use in the movie on film, but they were so high when they were editing this movie that I don't think they really were thinking about preservation of film, and, you know, the history, how this movie's longevity would
That's
be perceived
right.
down the road. I think that, you know, it's all probably up in smoke somewhere.
So up in smoke is a nice way to put it. You talked about Ted Knight in your book a little bit, and, you know, he didn't get along with Rodney Dangerfield at all. Were there certain characters that just butted heads and they had to kind of keep separate?
Yeah, I mean, basically there were two real clashes in this movie. One was between Rodney and Ted Knight, and one was between Bill Murray and Chevy Chase. The Rodney Ted Knight thing, that was more about like acting style, right? Rodney didn't have any experience making movies. He didn't know the basics of how movies were made. And Ted Knight was, you know, like a seasoned professional.
Right.
He had been on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. He had won Emmys. You know, his whole philosophy was you come to the set early and you know your lines and you deliver those lines word for word, you know, every period, comma, et cetera. Rodney Dangerfield, who he did a lot of scenes with, you know, his idea was just to sort of be the Tasmanian devil and just, you know, spout out whatever comes into your mind and leave it up to the other guy to keep up with you. Now, Ted Knight did not like acting that way, and he really got ticked off working with Rodney Dangerfield. You know, he just thought he was unprofessional and uncouth, and it drove him crazy working with Rodney. So those two really did not get along. And in fact, I think a lot of the rage and anger that Judge Smales has in the movie is not really acting at all. It's just sort of, you know, rage of Ted Knight. With Bill and Chevy, it was a little more complicated because, you know, Chevy Chase had been the breakout star on the first season of Saturday Night Live, and he left after the first season to go become a movie star. And the people who were left behind in the cast, I think, had some sort of hurt feelings about Chevy. They thought maybe his ego had gotten too big, and Bill Murray was his replacement. And so when Chevy came back to guest host in 1978, Bill Murray, as the new guy, sort of thought that it was his job to be the Avenger a little bit. And the two of them got into an actual fist fight backstage before Chevy went out to give his monologue. So by the time those two got down to Florida, they were not the best of friends by any means. And no one really knew how it would go once they were there together. I don't think either of them even knew how it was going to go. And so everyone was walking on eggshells. Now, the thing that turned that around a little bit was when they did that scene together in Carl's shack, you know, the whole pool or the pond scene, that they were both so good and they had so much fun doing that. And they impressed each other so much as improvisers, because the whole scene is just ad-libbed. That I think that's sort of the moment when the ice sort of melted between them a little bit. I wouldn't say that they're the best of friends these days, but they're certainly in a much better place than they were coming into Caddyshack.
Well, Chris, it was an interesting read. I mean, I'm obviously a big fan of Caddyshack, always have been, and I you know, if it's such a rewatchable movie, and I would say that, you know, I'm 34 years old. And it was one of those first movies that, you know, if it was on TV, you could jump in anytime. If it's on TV, will you still jump into it, or are you like burn out?
Oh my God, yeah. It's one of three movies that when it comes on TV, I have to watch it till the end. It's that, Jaws, and The Godfather. Any of those come on, I am stuck for the next however long it is till it ends. And it's, you know, it's just, to me, the movie is imperfect and it's a mess and it's total chaos. But for some reason, its messiness and imperfections make it perfect to me.
It's exactly what I think it was supposed to be. Exactly what you said. It was like a Cobb salad. It was all mixed up.
Yeah.
And you didn't really know what was happening, but yet it still tasted good. And that's what I've felt every time I've watched it, is there, the pool scene and the golf scene and the Dalai Lama scene. You know, if you presented that to somebody, again, as we talked about a few minutes ago, in 2018, they'd roll their eyes. But in this world, it played, and it still plays, and it's a lot of fun to watch. I can only imagine how much fun it was to write. I'm sure there were times where you're frustrated about it, but I'm sure you had a couple interviews where once you got off the phone, you probably were like fist pumping like Tiger was, you know, back in 2000, because
yeah,
you were able to kind of showcase this movie that everybody around the game of golf has been a fan of.
Absolutely. And you know, just even, I mean, the book came out last week, and just already the feedback I've gotten from golfers and people who love the game has been amazing, because, you know, they all love this movie, but I think for a lot of them, they don't know or all of the backstory and craziness that it went on. And even if they knew some of it, they didn't know this extent of it. And it's really, you know, I hope it sort of, my goal was to sort of tell the story of the making of this movie without demystifying what makes it so great. So, you know, I'm happy to hear that some people think that that's what it does.
Well, Chris, I appreciate the time. If anybody wants to check it out, read it, they can go on, I mean, you know, Amazon, obviously, but anywhere that books are sold, basically, you can check out Caddyshack, The Making of a Hollywood Cinderella Story. It is a great read, and it is definitely worth your time. And as I did, you kind of breeze through it. I feel like you get to about page 200 and you're like, wow, I didn't even realize I'm here. And I love the way you set it up too, when you kind of like set it up as this premiere, quote unquote premiere, where everybody's hungover. I felt like that was such a great way to introduce yourself to this movie, because it is actually how you probably should watch the movie.
exactly.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole.
A big thanks to Chris for jumping on. That was a fun chat. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure you check out the book. It was a fascinating read. It's a great look into, again, a movie that we've all quoted a billion times as we've been on the golf course. And just a reminder that summer is basically here, and it involves a lot of things: the sun, the beach, summer camps, refreshing cold beverages, and of course, vacation. Vacation means travel. So what should you do? You should switch to an Ogio bag. That's what. Make the most of your precious time this summer and upgrade to Ogio. And special for listeners of this Clubhouse podcast, celebrate back to summer with Ogio by saving 25% on all travel bags on ogio.com with the promo code Clubhouse. Type in Clubhouse, you'll save 25%. Your life will be so much better when you get home. It is a lot less stressful, because you know where your dirty clothes are because of the separated pockets. I do it. I love it. I look like an Ogio ad when I get to the airports, and I'm okay with that, because they are the best bags in the business. Ogio, the world's best bags. Check back next week. We will have some guests as we approach the U.S. Open, players wrapping up. But, you know, here at Fox, we are gearing up for Shinnecock Hills. I'll be out at Shinnecock this next week. Actually, I'm going to be at Shinnecock twice in the next 10 days. You know, somebody's got to do it. I guess I'll do it. Make sure you get out this weekend and play some golf, make some birdies, and check back next week.